Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Detroit Tigers top prospects. We're going to go through the farm system today on the call up. I'm Aram Layton. He's Jack McMullen. We switched up a little bit here. So we were going to do mock draft and then Detroit Tigers. Since we did a little bit of mock draft talk on the Just Baseball show, and I know some of you wonderful people are overlap listeners, thank you so much to those of you who are. We want to give you a little bit of a break and then also go into different detail on the mock draft on Friday. And also, I got the Tiger system done, so why not do it now? Jack, there's some guys that you've seen recently. There's some names that you know you saw last year. And then there's just some names that we've talked about plenty. So this is a pretty fun farm system for us to go through.
Yeah, I think 1 through 10 looks really good. 11 through 15 is all right. And then you kind of start looking for scraps here, but like those scraps can turn into big league pieces. So I'd say they have done a good job. What I will say is Alavila, I know he had his issues building a major league baseball team. He drafted pretty well at the end. Like he found some late round gems in Skubal and Kerry Carpenter. And like his first round picks, you know, albeit not all are great. Most of them were semi-hits. Like I'm thinking about, you know, the lowest end of the hit was probably Matt Manning in the last, you know, 6-7 years. But Spencer Torkelson, big leaguer. Riley Green, big leaguer. Casey Mize, big leaguer. Looks healthy, looks really good right now. Jackson Jobe, Jace Young, his last two first-round picks. Like those are two of their top five prospects. It's crazy to think that like with all – the issues that were going on in the Alavila regime, he was drafting really well at the top. And I will say it's probably easy to find hits when you're drafting as high as he was. Like they were always in the top 10. And, you know, two of those guys that I just named were number one overall.
I was going to say several were number one. Several were top five. I think almost all of them were top five. Riley Green was the pick that I think was really good. Even though that's a number five pick, that was a really good nab there.
And I thought Jobe was a good nab too. Like it's hard to take a high school right-hander in the top three.
Absolutely. I think that was an absolutely great pick too. So no, he's done especially relative to what he was doing elsewhere. Definitely the draft was kind of a saving grace. And I do think, you know, a lot of people are going to talk about the Max Clark selection versus Wyatt Langford, blah, blah, blah. But if you look at the other picks that Scott Harris, you know, made in this draft, we're going to talk about McGonigal, who's back and healthy, by the way. And guess what he's done? He's hit right away. Yeah. And then some of the other names that they went a little bit later in the draft on that I'm very intrigued on. I think Harris is going to replenish a lot of depth in this farm system. I think he's going to do really well with the middle rounds and continue to fill this thing up. But I think the Tigers farm is all, you know, generally in a good spot, but I do agree with you. It's one of the steeper drop-offs after the top 15. That said, it's a very, very solid top 10, especially without Colt Keith graduating just yet.
100%.
So let's jump in to the names to watch. A guy who's going to graduate quite soon and It's actually looked pretty good so far, all things considered. I haven't checked in on the numbers over the last week. That's the thing that sucks about it being this early in the season, man. Like, sometimes we'll be on the show. I say, oh, this guy was, you know, this guy's off to a good start. And then someone will say, no, he's not, because he went 0 for 6. His OPS went from 900 to, you know, 680 or something like that. But I've watched the Wensiel Perez at bats that I have watched have been good. And he's looked comfortable, and he's looked like a guy that could be a utility slash depth piece. So far, the numbers are pretty good. I don't know what they are just in the big leagues, but if you combine AAA in the big leagues, pretty good. I think he's a bench utility piece.
Yes. So 7 or 10 games, he's got 7 hits. He's hitting .270 with an .806 OPS in his first 10 major league games. So that's nice. Fourth outfielder, Wensiel Perez is like totally a fourth outfielder. And you know what? That's enough to be a names to watch for sure. Tyler Madison is a guy that I was really excited for, but Tommy John is going to have him out until about the All-Star break. Madison was a guy that was a middle round pick, early round, fourth round. I consider fourth round middle round. I think early round is 1 through 3. But Madison, a middle round pick out of Bryant. So what are you getting there? He was a starting pitcher at Bryant. They move him to the pen and he ticks up big time. And it's mid-90s. He can flirt with the high 90s. And he's got that curveball slider combination where he's leaning into that one turn of his wrist. He's not trying to figure out a changeup because he doesn't need it. And he was electric last year between high A and double A. I was excited to see him probably get his first big league shot this year, but not the case. TJ, such is life in baseball and with pitchers in 2024. So that stinks.
He probably cracks a top 15 if not for the injury. That's a guy that goes all the way back to, you know, my first job on in the NECBL with the Newport Goals. And I love the way he threw back then. But back then it was more kind of pitchability. And, you know, there was some stuff. I mean, the breaking ball was always there. But seeing the way the fastball has trended, as you mentioned, since he went to the bullpen, great characteristics to it, too. He's got great ride on the fastball. And I'm sure he's going to come back and be just fine. But the curveball and the changeup both being really solid pitches, this is a unique profile to me. And the reason why I think he would have been in the top 15 is because he's not just your run-of-the-mill reliever. He's a multi-inning option here. He's a guy that, you know, you may ultimately want to stretch back out to 3-4 innings and can be that opener. It could be a piggyback guy. I think he can be a Swiss Army type of piece, not quite a swingman type, but I think the stuff is good enough to potentially be in leverage, but he also is durable enough, durable as he comes back from Tommy John. I should say, you know, just is able to handle the workload across multiple innings well enough, you know, on pretty frequent outings from what I've seen over multiple years to be able to kind of play this unique role there. So I think Madison's going to be a great piece for them at the end of the day.
Hope so. Yeah. Another proximity guy is Eddie Leonard, who I made a note off the top. Leonard was a 40-man clearance. I think I made the note off the top of Wensiel Perez's write-up. If Leonard was healthy, he was probably the guy that got the call, but he wasn't, and Perez was in the right place at the right time. He was available at the right time, and that's why he's in the big leagues right now. Eddie Leonard really has nothing left to prove in the minor leagues, and it was a one man's trash is another man's treasure type situation. He was DFA'd in like a 40-man crunch last deadline by the Dodgers. Detroit purchases him. He goes nuts in a 40-game sample. Hit .300, slugged .530 with Toledo, and he looked like a guy that could jump up and play on a non-competitive Tigers team. He didn't get that opportunity. He started slow. He got hurt. I think it's an oblique thing right now. Yeah, an oblique strain. But Leonard is a guy that can play second, third, center, left, and short to varying abilities. Like, I wouldn't love if he was at short every day. I wouldn't love if he was in center every day. But he screams big league utility guy.
Yep. And had a really good spring training too. So yeah, you could say, oh boy, he was off to a slow start, you know, in AAA, but in a larger sample of spring training, 18 games, he had an OPS over 1,000 and he was striking out just at an 11% clip. So, you know, I wonder if that oblique was kind of nagging him before, and then it really ended up becoming an issue, you know, the 7th of the month was the last game he played. So I'm interested to see when he comes back and how they use him, but I'm with you. I think he looks like he could be a nice utility piece.
For sure. Enrique Jimenez, he's a young catcher that walked a ton in the DSL and hit enough to be notable. And that's what I have on Enrique Jimenez.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much it. Right. So, but when you're an 18-year-old and, you know, putting up the numbers, he was 17 last year when he put up these numbers. EVs are light at this point, but again, he was 17. Contact rates were above average, ran a pretty low chase rate, and sprayed the ball, you know, all over the yard as a switch hitting catcher. I'm definitely going to be intrigued. We got to see more and everything, but I think there's plenty to be excited about when he comes over to the complex, just to see what it looks like and get him stateside. But there's definitely a name to watch when you put up good numbers and you're a switch hitting catcher.
Yeah. Another guy is Brant Herder. You might see the name Herder when you're scrolling the MLB at Bat app or the ESPN app, when you see probable pitchers in like June or July, if they run into injury issues, and you could say, who is that? Brant Herder is a big guy, 6'6", 250 pounds. You think, okay, 6'6", 250 lefty. He probably throws mid 90s, right? No, he's a sinker at 91. He's got a sweeper. For the most part, over his last couple of starts, he's really only been sinker sweeper. And that's okay. Like that is absolutely spot start type guy. He's a big guy that I wish threw bigger, if that makes any sense. I wish he was a bit more of a power pitcher, but he can be a plug and play spot starter that gets a bunch of early contact on the ground. And all of a sudden, he's through six innings in a major league debut.
And the good part is, you know, it's not like a back and forth from AAA spot starter situation. You can have him in the bullpen as a more of a left-handed specialist, because you mentioned it's mostly sinker sweeper. And last year, lefties hit below 200 against him and could not slug at all. 224 slug last year left on left because of the way that his stuff works in opposite directions. So, you know, you could have him as that lefty specialist for you. And then if you ever need somebody to plug in and give you four or five innings, you know, he's capable of doing that or even more. He's very stretched out, fills up the zone enough. He's just a good, you can't have, every organization wants to have a Brant Herder, a guy that, like you mentioned, you could plug in and you're not toast. But what's nice about him is, you know, he can also fill a different role in the meantime.
Yeah, for sure. Wilmer Flores, now the reliever. If he was a starter, I think he probably cracks the top 15. Wilmer Flores has gotten off to a really rough start this year. And it was, you know, spring training, like, hey, he grabbed 101, but then he couldn't really throw a strike. And in Toledo to this point, he hasn't been able to throw a strike. 10 walks and 11 and two-thirds innings. This was the best move for Wilmer Flores. It's just crazy how not far, but far we are removed from 2022, when he was maybe the breakout pitcher in the minor leagues and he was walking two hitters per nine. Now, yeah, awesome. It's 100 and he's got that crazy curveball. But frankly, like, I watched him throw several times last week, 2 weeks ago. I had no confidence that he knew where it was going, which is bizarre. And I don't know how you go from 2022 Wilmer Flores to this Wilmer Flores.
No, I'm with you. It's weird, for sure. Especially because of, like you said, what he was doing as a starter.
He was a command oriented starter that had pretty loud stuff. And now the stuff has gotten louder, but the command is like gone. It's not even partially there. It's gone.
It almost seems borderline like yips at this point, in this season so far. It just, and it's not yips because he's getting through innings, but there's just so many non-competitive pitches. It's a testament to him that he can, and his stuff, that he can kind of recapture it and get through the inning. But I don't know. I've never really seen it. I can't think of a time recently where I've seen a guy be so around the zone as a starter and then now as a reliever, not that long after, just be so inconsistent and throw so many non-competitive pitches. Hopefully he can get back to it, because like you said, this stuff is pretty crazy.
Because that's not the template of guys that move to the bullpen. The guys that move to the bullpen are the ones that aren't around the zone. And they think, okay, you can survive over an inning. Like, you really never see command-oriented guys move to the pen. But he's a unique case. Blake Dickerson, left-hander, has yet to throw a professional inning. Really interesting kind of draft story about Blake Dickerson. Virginia native, was going to Virginia Tech, felt like very cut and dry. Hey, I'm going to go be a Hokie. 12th round, I think, came around, and San Diego last summer paid him $500,000. And he said, okay, let's do it. Then Detroit acquired him for $500,000 worth of international bonus pool money. So they really just like allocated the bonus to Blake Dickerson. Blake Dickerson, I watched several perfect game showcases. I watched a couple of high school YouTube clipped starts. Everything was missing up and arm side.
Yeah.
He's very lanky. He's very whippy. He's only 91 at 6'6", 210, but he's 6'6", 210, and it's very whippy. So if he can tick up a little bit, and I think everybody's expecting a guy like that too, it becomes a battle with himself because the delivery might be too weird to time up.
It's pretty low effort, though. You mentioned like he's whippy. It's pretty like it seems like it's something that he should be able to kind of rein in. And yeah. And I think it's a fun developmental challenge. And if you don't, you know, if you aren't really planning to use that $500,000 in bonus pool, yeah, go get the 6'5" lefty who, you know, it looks like, I don't have the data on it, but it looks like a fastball from the video I saw that rides a little bit too.
Sure.
It looks like you mentioned the whip. It looks like he's just spinning it pretty well with that arm speed. So I mean, that's a guy I'd love to take a shot on. And at 19 years old, 6'5", you know, a lot of times those lefties takes a little bit longer to kind of control those limbs.
Yeah. And then last name to watch is Max Anderson, who I assume would be in the 16 range for you.
Right around there. Yeah.
Yeah. Max Anderson was with second round pick this past year out of the University of Nebraska. It was a breakout. It was a Mitch Trubisky type thing where it was a 1 year true breakout. But the breakout was exceptional in the Big Ten, hit .414, 21 homers, 29 punchouts in 57 mm-hmm. games with Nebraska. So he rides that in, has a decent start in Lakeland, has gotten off to a really slow start in West Michigan. But he's probably limited to second base. He's got exceptional bat to ball skills, it seems. And the question is the power real with Wood? It's probably not 20. It might be 10 to 15.
And, you know, this is the classic field of hit versus the plate discipline. The field of hit's good. The plate discipline undermines it a little bit. Can he cut down on the chase? He has in the early going this year relative to what we saw last year, which is encouraging. And I do think, you know, it's just kind of hard to hit in West Michigan right now. So that's something that, you know, as it gets warmer, hopefully he will too. But he's definitely an intriguing offensive piece with what he did last year. And if he can get closer to the 20 home run marker, I think you could see an everyday player there. And I think there's the potential for that as he works to elevate a bit more because the EVs are solid.
Gotcha.
We get into the top 15, a name that we've talked about plenty. And a guy that you've seen a little bit, I think, right over the last couple seasons, once he's healthy, Dylan Dingler. Dingler, I loved him out of the draft. Second round pick, a guy that, you know, you look at what he was doing at Ohio State, you know, playing center field, then catching, you know, you could dream on some power there as well. He could motor, so athletic, big arm, all the tools were there. And we saw in the early going and spurts of his professional career, this guy can play. He's had some horrible injury luck. It's been a hamate. It's been knee surgery. I think some concussion in there, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, that's just how it goes sometimes, especially for catchers. I still feel really confident about him being a backup catcher at the very least and like a good one. But I feel like he's going to be a guy that can – he's kind of between that right now. I mean, we're at this present moment, he's between either a really good backup or a second or third division starter and that, you know, average big league starting catcher. And I think he can still get to that average big league starting catcher because you have a plus arm behind the dish. You have the above average power. You have athleticism. He's a good receiver, good makeup, works with staffs well. I ultimately think he figures out a way to, you know, be an everyday catcher. But a lot of times, as we see, sometimes these catchers, it's 27, 28 years old where they finally settle in and become an everyday guy.
So can I tell you, I thought the athleticism would translate to a lot more field of hit than it has at this point. And I'm not sure like why I thought that. But with him, I saw him in college and then I saw him in high A in 2021. And I was like, okay, this guy's just a natural gifted athlete. And I think natural gifted athletes, I just immediately assume good field of hit, or at least a field of hit that can progress. And it unfortunately just hasn't progressed. And is it because he's missed a bunch of time? Maybe. Is it because he's trying to learn how to catch level by level? Maybe. But I don't know, you're at AAA again this year. You spent about a month there last year. This is a full year in Triple, and then you see what you got in Carson Kelly. And I think Dingler can absolutely be a backup timeshare catcher at the basic, at the big league level.
I definitely thought the bat to ball would be better, and kind of just as the more I watched it, again, I don't know how much of that was injury related or whatever, but it just kind of lacked some of the quickness. He does provide power. Like, he does hit the ball hard, but there's sometimes not as much, you know, whip with the barrel as you'd like to see. And he's a little long to the ball. So I think at the end of the day, the hit tool is going to be below average. But again, if you can provide above average power, hopefully he can improve the plate discipline a little bit. You can pallet it when you're a really good defender and do all the other things that I think Dingler is going to be able to do behind the dish.
Yeah.
14, another guy that you had to go watch the Perfect Game showcases to get some info on. Paul Wilson, left-handed pitching prospect who was selected in the 2023 draft. Another part of the reason why the Tigers wanted to go under slot and over slot with their later picks, they almost went twice the slot value in the third round to get Paul Wilson. His father, Trevor Wilson, was a big league pitcher for parts of 8 seasons. I mean, when you give out double the slot value for a prep pitcher, usually there's some upside to dream on there. And I think that's exactly what the case is with Paul Wilson. He's 6'3". He's southpaw. He's got plenty of room, I think, to continue to get stronger and be a little bit more physical. He's athletic on the mound. The fastball has good characteristics. The slider looks like it could ultimately be a plus pitch. He's mixed in some good curveballs in, you know, the low 70s. And I think that's another aspect that is intriguing. But the command is, you know, work in progress. And as is the case for a lot of taller lefties. And, yeah, I think that's going to be what the sticking point is. But when you have the fastball and the slider like that, a curveball that he's mixed in, I think there's a lot to like here. And there's a reason why, you know, the Tigers shelled out what was almost first round money, early second round money.
How about an arm from the Northwest? You never see pitchers from the Northwest. You only see hitters. And I think that kids are so disincentivized in the Northwest from pitching because, like, all of a sudden, the kid that hasn't hit puberty with just took you 300 feet. And it's like, what's going on here? Like, the ball shouldn't fly like this. So credit to him for being good enough when he was 11 years old to not lose confidence entirely. But I'm sure that comes from having a dad that was a big leaguer for a good bit of time. And yeah, I always root for my pitchers from the Northwest. And pretty easy to get to Driveline in Kent, Washington. It's probably, what, 2-3 hours from Oregon City, Oregon? I have no idea.
And I don't know when we're going to see him throw. He's yet to throw professionally. I'm not sure what, you know, what the latest is on him in that regard. But I do know that the Tigers are excited about him and a guy that I think they're going to treat with care, given the investment. But also, you know, I think are very interested in, you know, what the debut is going to look like and ready to probably see him climb and be, you know, one of the higher upside guys in their farm from a pitching, you know, pitching side of things. I'm just interested to see how they handle him, what the innings are going to look like, you know, when he's going to start to really be unleashed. But for now, we just got to wait and see.
Yep.
13, a guy you saw recently, right-hander Keider Montero, who's in AAA right now. He's a tough one to peg for me in terms of where he ultimately settles in, because you look at the stuff and you could easily see a big league starter. It's above average fastball, above average slider, at least an average curveball. And he's had a changeup that's flash. I mean, last year it was very useful for him. This year it has not been useful for him at all. And then the command's kind of the same thing. Sometimes it looks average, sometimes it looks below that. You saw him recently. You know, how did you, and I know he threw well, how did you come away feeling about Keider Montero?
I loved him. And I was talking to the Indy coaching staff when they got back to town. And as simple as you can put it, the consensus was he's got some shit to him. And if you don't know what that means, it means that he can compete. And it was him up against Paul Skeens. And, you know, like, that'll level a lot of guys up when they see that they are part of a marquee pitching matchup. And he pitched the part. Like, he really looked the part. The fastball was jumping on guys. And the slider, man, like, he was dotting the slider east and west. And it was really impressive. I feel like when he does get the call, it really is going to come down to slider command.
Mm-hmm.
If he's a one pitch guy, the fastball is not good enough to survive on that. And he's like kind of spraying the slider. But if he can put it inside and outside of right-handed hitters and left-handed hitters, I think you could see this guy really carve in a debut like that and in a couple, you know, big league starts off the top. So I saw a good slider day from Keiter Montero. I'm excited to see how many more good slider days he has upcoming. And this is an easy story to root for. You've got a 2016 $40,000 IFA guy. Like, those guys are not supposed to be in a position they are in 2024, 8 years after they signed. But, you know, here we are, Keiter Montero, you know, much like Wenzel Perez, is looking like he'll debut at some point.
And, you know, I love what you mentioned about the story. He left unprotected twice in the Rule 5 draft before being added to the 40-man this past November. I think that slider could easily tick closer to the plus territory if he commands it, like you said. So far this year, it's definitely been that pitch for him where, I mean, it's been able to get him out of a lot of tough spots, with the curveball being there for him too is nice to see. I think that the slider and the fastball alone give him, you know, reliever floor. And you imagine in one inning spurts, that fastball probably plays closer to a plus pitch as well. Right. But at this point, he looks like a guy that could be a back end of the rotation starter. I think at the very least, though, you have a swing man, seventh inning type that, you know, could be a really nice piece.
For sure.
Number 12, recently acquired at the last trade deadline for Michael Lorenzen, Hao-Yu Lee, second baseman. Another guy that's a unique case that is a little difficult to peg, but there's plenty to like, especially from an offensive perspective. Originally a shortstop, that ship has sailed. He's playing second base now, but in the time that he was working on his shortstop defense, really, I think, ended up improving his range to the degree that it can play well at second base. So I think he actually looks like he could be an average defender there. The arm is more than strong enough, I think, above average at second base. And he's even able to plug in at third. What you're looking at, though, is the offensive ability. I think there's an above average feel to hit. I think there's above average plate discipline. And the EVs are fine. I think they're roughly average. He's been hitting the ball even harder this year. He's not going to be a guy that ultimately taps into a ton of game power. I think that's something he's working on. But ultimately, I think it's going to be fringy game power. And then the defense is kind of is what it is. I think the instincts kind of push him up a little bit higher, too. He's efficient and effective on the base paths. You see the instincts in the field as well. I think there's a path to him being an everyday second baseman, but at the very least, he crushes lefties. And I think he could be a platoon, you know, multi infielder, you know, that could play second, third and demolish lefties and do some of the little things.
He's unremarkable in a good way. Like, nothing he does is going to be like, whoa. And no batted balls. I know you mentioned the EVs have gotten better, but none of the batted balls that he's got are going to make you say, whoa. Like, he's not going to kill a ball, and he'll sneak, what, he snuck six out last year in 75 games. He'll sneak some out. We've got 45 in the future. But the thing that kind of gets me about him is, like, he's just a guy that'll make you sleep soundly at night. And you can never have enough of those guys as second baseman.
He's just 21 years old, too. Right. $500,000 IFA and by the Phillies. And I think a specific target for Harris, the type of player that Harris likes, right, is these guys that can hit and have a good feel for the zone. The reason why I'm dreaming on a little bit more power is he had some pretty serious back issues, if I'm not mistaken, kind of going into his professional career, and then has had some other ailments. I mean, this guy's only played, I want to say, like 177 games as a pro since 2021. So we're talking about a guy that, yeah, was 177, that, you know, hasn't had a ton of run just yet and just turned 21. So I do think that there's, you know, just getting healthy, getting his body right. There's been a few other ailments and injuries that he's dealt with as well. I do think that there could be more power in the tank there as he just gets more comfortable and more healthy. But even if the power is more in the 40 range, I think the above average hit, above average plate discipline, and the little things that he's able to do on top of that could make him, you know, an average regular.
Gotcha.
11, guy you saw recently as well. I know he didn't have a great series against you guys, if I'm not mistaken, but also friend of the program, really nice guy. Justice Bigby, outfielder in AAA. It was one of the breakout hitters last year. And I think one of the biggest surprises, not only in the Tiger system, but I'd say just in minor league baseball, really underrated player, 19th round pick, 555th overall. But the feel to hit for a guy that, you know, was a 19th round pick stood out. And the EVs were really good too. I always talk about him as like a data darling relative to a lot of other hitters that you're going to see in his range. I mean, the batted ball data is on par with a lot of top 100 prospects. I think just some of the concern is it going to translate to professional baseball? He struggles to pull the ball in the air. The ground ball rates are a little elevated. And if you look at his spray charts, almost everything is going the other way. And I know that's kind of his plan, and that's kind of what he likes to do, and he talked about that on the show. But I do have some concerns once you get to the big league level. They're just going to start ripping you inside, hard stuff inside. Are you going to be able to not only turn that around, but turn that around in the air? That's something that I think could catch up to him. There is a lot of weak contact in the infield. But this guy can really crush him the other way, can crush him to center field in a 90th percentile exit velocity, almost at 106 last year with above average contact rates, and put up ridiculous numbers across three levels. So there's plenty to like, but with limited defensive value as well, you know, below average arm, range out there, a lot of pressure on the bat, and you know, the plate discipline isn't great. So he's going to have to hit for power and he's going to have to hit for average. I think he can. I think he showed us that he can. And he's already been heating up a little bit this year and over the last 10 games.
Now, 21-game sample, have AAA pitchers been busting him inside? Is that why we've seen the struggles or no?
It's definitely part of it. He's definitely been getting a lot more pitches inside, and fastballs have now chewed him up a little bit more. So that is definitely, I think, contributing to the slower start. But we've seen him now in the last 10 games. It's small sample, but he's hitting 324, 872 OPS. Maybe he's adjusting back a bit, but I do think that that's something that is going to be challenged at the AAA level and then even more so at the big league level.
Yeah, it's tough because I watched him for a full week when he was like clearly not right. I don't want to say lost because that's unfair. It was just early in counts. It was soft contact and then the at-bat was over. Like I really didn't get a feel for Justice Bigby over six games because like, there wasn't enough time to get a feel for him versus a guy like Jace Young or Malloy. They give you time to get a feel for him. When Bigby's going right, he's not punching out. He's also not walking that much. Like he's going to attack an 0-0, 0-1, 1-0 pitch and he's going to hammer it. And you're going to be like, whoa, that happened very quickly. He is the perfect guy to have come up fifth in an ambush. Like you've got a 3-run inning. Chances are Justice Bigby was somewhere in the middle of that. And he capitalized when the pitcher didn't have his full focus on that next pitch.
And that's the thing. So I like that he can, you know, ambush and take advantage of that. But there's also the aspect, as you mentioned, of kind of giving away at bats. And, you know, you don't want to do that with an aggressive, you know, nature as well. So I'm a believer in the bat, though, still. Like the way he's able to handle velocity still for the most part when it's out over the plate. And I think he's made some changes to be able to turn around velocity a little bit better inside. And he's always been quick and direct enough to handle velo. It's just, again, being inside and getting tied up and getting beat in there a bit. It seems like he's made some subtle adjustments there. He's starting to elevate a little bit more. And if he fixes, you know, that little blue zone and or becomes more selective to where, hey, I'm going to, you know, shrink, I'm going to look out more. And then with two strikes, you know, then I'll have to cover a little bit more of the plate. We could see him be more consistent. But I do think you hit the nail on the head with the early weak contact. That's just pitchers are going to exploit that and you know, get you to get yourself out early in ABs. So, you know, I'd love to see him cut down on the chase a bit more. What's interesting is over the last 10 games or so, specifically the fastball, 15 games, let's even go, the fastball chase rate continues to dwindle. So if I cut it down to 10, this is actually crazy. He has not chased a four-seam fastball in his last 10 games.
That's awesome.
So you're seeing a tangible change here. We talked to him on the show. Like he's a really smart hitter. He's a guy that worked really hard to continue to get better and better and climb out of what, Western Carolina and get 395 there and then do what he did last year. So I'm going to believe on a guy like that being able to continue to make adjustments. And I do think that there's a big league bat in here. And that's why he's ranked 11th. And you know, when we get to the top 10, you'll see. So a lot of really good players in the top 10. Bigby's a big league bat one way or another.
Really good. Before we get to number 10, I do want to tell you about our friends at Game Time. We've all found ourselves in a situation somewhat similar to this. You see that there's like a great pitching matchup, whether it be at the big league level or the minor league level, like RM in New York. He was waiting to see when Carson Palmquist was going to throw in Hartford, Connecticut. So you're willing to drive an hour or two for that. You know, you got a concert going as well. So you go scanning for tickets. And there's roadblocks everywhere. It's like, oh, I can't get a good deal to the Yankee game tonight. I can't get a good deal to this concert. Nothing at the last minute. List goes on. Let's fix that for you. New friend of the show is Game Time. Game Time is now an authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball, which makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to first pitch. You've got killer last minute deals, all in prices, views from your seat, and their lowest price guarantee, which, you know, you combine it all together. Game Time in turn takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. I personally have had a great time with Game Time. We've got a rainout in Indy or in Omaha this week. Friday doesn't look good. Guess who's in town? Pacers Bucks game 3. I might go if Game Time looks right. Use Game Time for last minute deals. Save up to 60% off buying last minute for sports, concerts, comedy, theater, list goes on. Yes, you get a lowest price guarantee. Yes, you get panoramic seat views. I like the all-in pricing. It's a toggle, so you know exactly what you're getting into, and then being hit with a convenience fee and a processing fee and a fee, like all those at checkout. Just stay away. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Use the code JUSTBASEBALL, all caps, one word, for $20 off your first purchase. Again, terms apply, JUSTBASEBALL, all caps, for $20 off. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed at Game Time.
It's nice when you got, like for you, you got the stadium or the arena right around the corner in New York. It's always great for me because the price is going down as the game gets closer. Sometimes right. I'll just play a game of chicken. Sometimes, you know, it doesn't go down enough and I'll just hang out. I'm like, I'm not that interested in the game. It's fine. But there's been times where like I was on the fence about going. I just keep checking Game Time. I'm like, all right, well, I cannot pass on this deal at the top of the like subway and go to the game.
Flash sale, like the font's green. I'm in. Let's do it.
The flash sales go crazy. So use that promo code to save the money on the tickets. I got a couple of buddies use it and save money on their tickets this weekend to the Mets game. Nice. And it helps us out as well. So thank you very much. Let's get into the top 10, which starts with Josue Briseño. Briseño is a popular name, a guy I've talked about in the bonus episodes a little bit, which you can, by the way, subscribe to with the link in the episode description. Briseño has got big power potential, good feel to hit for a 6'4 lefty. I don't think he's sticking behind the dish, though, Jack. That's my concern. $800,000 international free agent in 2022. I did the defensive video, just was tough. He's 6'4". He's 6'4", 19. That's right at the border of guys that can like stick at the position as is. And then when you're 19, it's even harder to move well. I was watching him, you know, the catch and throw. The footwork there just wasn't great. The blocking is a work in progress. He's improved the receiving. It's possible that he sticks there. But when I'm looking at a Briseño, I think you got to operate under the assumption that he's moving to first base. And then what does it look like there? Because, of course, if he sticks a catcher and he's an average catcher, then he's a top 100 prospect with the offensive potential that he has. But I just think that there's too much risk to move to first base. That said, he's a top 10 prospect in this system because the batted ball data is really intriguing. I think the power has been sapped a bit because of the Florida State League and also because his swing is flat. But his swing is flat because I think he wants to be direct to the baseball as a longer levered kid and make contact. And he makes pretty frequent contact and he still hits the ball quite hard. So there's a lot of underlying data that, you know, points towards positive things. But I do have a concern about him being able to create loft and leverage and not have that result in more whiff. And then I also just have concern that he ends up at first base and now you have a lot of pressure on the stick.
So you either texted me about him or I saw a tweet about him and I was like, why is everybody obsessing over this guy with Omaha? Isn't he like 30? That's Josue Briseño, not Josue Briseño, a catcher as well. I was like, what's going on?
Great. So that crazy.
Your Josue Briseño update through five games in the Mexican
League. He's the Mexican League, right? Yeah. Isn't he on Robinson Cano's team?
I think so. He's 3-17 so far in the Mexican League. So really tough break for Josue Briseño. But Josue Briseño is off to a nice little start, sort of, kind of. He's teammates with Clark and McGonagall. You can speak to his start a little bit more. Like he's walking all the time, which is excellent. He's got a 380 OBP. He's hitting 250. Problem is, he's really not hitting for over the fence power or gap to gap power. And that I feel like is a lot of the appeal with a guy like this. That is, I mean, as you're saying, destined to move off of the catching position.
Yeah. So what I've seen so far this year is it just feels like the contact point's deeper and he's longer. And that's my concern is, you know, I think that
the swing can get a little long, and that's going to make it really difficult for him to, you know, continuously tap into that power. And
but the thing is, if the swing is long, you expect more punch outs than he has at this
point. Yeah. Well, and that's so to mitigate that, he's been very direct to the ball and very flat, and that's resulted in a lot more contact. And, you know, and I think it's long just by nature of the levers. And I just don't know if he has quite enough whip to overcome that. So I think he's trying to find kind of exactly where he wants to make contact, exactly what the best path is for him. And, you know, he's catching it deeper this year. And I think as a result, when you're catching it deeper, it's a little bit harder to create that loft, right? A lot of the home runs that guys are going to hit are going to be a little bit out in front of home plate, especially if you're longer levered. And that's going to allow you to also create more loft as well. So he's catching it a little bit deeper. His swing's been a little bit flatter. And so far, you know, you've got an average launch angle below 5 degrees. So I think that's part of the challenge right here. And I think average hard hit launch angle. But that said, there's been times where everything is in sync. He looks, he's on time. He catches one out front and scorches him. And he's had several batted balls, 109 miles an hour. There's plenty more room for physicality. I think he can get stronger. He's 19. So, you know, as he gets stronger, that could come with a little bit more, you know, bat speed and whip as well, and just raw power. But you mentioned the approach, sub 20% chase rate. He also showed a good approach last year. I think that helps a ton. I do think that you can dream on above average power, at least average hit, and then above average plate discipline, which is a really nice offensive profile, even at first base, but you're going to need all of those things to come together. So yeah, I would love to see him elevate a bit more and catch the ball further out front. But, you know, I think at this point at 19 years old, there's definitely some good indicators so far. Of course, walking more than you're striking out being one of them, and the batted ball data being one of them as well.
Yeah.
Number eight or nine, I should say. Recent guest of the show, another guy that you saw recently and had one of the better at-bats I've seen against Paul Skeens so far this year. What a battle that was. Justin Henry Molloy, outfielder in AAA, should get the call at some point. You know, if they need somebody, you figure he's kind of the next man up. A weird profile to try to peg. By the way, also, one of the best dudes in professional baseball, point blank, period. Just such an awesome guy. Happy-go-lucky, I would say. But a competitor at the same time. It's a really cool juggle. It's also some of the best plate discipline you're going to find in the minor leagues. And the interesting profile aspect of it is, okay, now he's playing the outfield, no more third. That's fine. I think he can be a fine outfielder. I think he'd be average at least because he runs well enough. He's athletic enough. He's got a cannon for an arm. So that helps. The contact rates, I'm a little concerned about. They're fringy.
Yeah.
The power, the exit velocities are average, but he elevates consistently. He knows how to leverage his hitters' counts really well. And when, you know, how to try to swing for the fences, pull side and elevate and backspin.
Yeah.
There's a big league role here for sure. And it's going to just put a lot of pressure on his ability to tap into the power consistently enough and, or make enough contact. But when you walk the way he walks, nobody walks more than him professionally. He's improved defensively. I like his profile a lot more in a corner outfield, and you know, the makeup, I'll bet on that makeup any day of the week. He's a big leaguer one way or another, even if it's a platoon guy. But I think there's enough there offensively to be a regular.
I think so. Look at him. I think the last week, putting the ball in play. When I saw him, like, he was, you know, walks in, K's, both, you know, much, much greater than the amount of games that he has played. But I feel like he's putting the ball in play a little bit more over the last couple of games. The thing that makes him so valuable when he does swing the bat, I feel like, is the thing that, you know, we talk about a lot on the Just Baseball show when it comes to a guy like Isak Paredes, where he just has a natural feel to backspin. And Paredes, the joke is pull side all the time. And Molloy can hit it really well to the opposite field, too. I remember a spring training homer in Dunedin that he like punched out and got out in a hurry in right center. So the EVs aren't great. How do you make the most of your quote unquote three true outcome type build at the plate? It's by elevating all the time and hoping that you catch the jet stream enough. And he does that enough. So this is a guy that had 23 homers last year, 17 the year before that. He's good enough to get it done. But man, like, I watch some games that he'll go through and he'll get into a 3-2 count every single time. And I'm like,
yeah,
it's borderline passive, but like you make it work. And I'm not going to ding you for that because you're still very productive.
My concern is, you know, at the big league level, you know, you get one pitch to hit in that bat sometimes, and then you're deep in a count. 3-2, man. Like you may not see a fastball. You might see, no, you might still see a bang.
You're flipping a coin, man. Like I don't want at bats to come down to coin flips.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the one other subtle thing with him is, you know, he starts with his hands low and he crushes low pitches, but he doesn't really bring them up to a slot. A lot of guys that start low, you'll see them bring them up. He starts low and kind of keeps them low. And I was like, how the hell does he get to high pitches? He really doesn't. Like that, top third of the zone, like it's the numbers aren't good there, but he's so disciplined. He's talking about like Mike Trout and laying off of those pitches up there. Like he's so disciplined that I think he hedges that issue. So he's just going to need to continue to elevate balls at the bottom of the zone, like hard sinkers, heavy fastballs, sliders, all the stuff that you're going to be getting, you know, waist high and below. Can you elevate those consistently? I think he can. I love that you use the word punch because that's the word that comes to my mind when I see a swing. And I think he can punch balls the other way in the air. He's quick enough to punch to the pull side, but he's going to really hone in on who he is as a hitter, which he has. But I also think there needs to be a little bit more aggression from him. And just so you don't get into all of these deep counts when you get to the big league level. That said, like there's a big league role here. The makeup being, you know, 80, the plate discipline being 70, the power being 50 is enough. And then, you know, the ability to backspin, like you said, sub 40% ground ball rate. There's enough feel to hit. And the defense has come such a long way in the outfield.
Yeah.
Number eight, guy who's unfortunately on the shelf. But, man, I mean, we watched Sawyer Gibson Long last year, right-hander at the big league level. It was a breakout year for him. What a breakout year for so many Tigers prospects, by the way. Mm-hmm. Gibson Long's older. 26 years old and on the shelf for a year. So this tells you how confident I am that he is going to be a back end of the rotation starter for the Tigers when he comes back. We saw it last year. Like he was good through the minor leagues and then great in the big leagues. And I don't think it was a flash in the pan. Gets elite or at least very good extension. It's like well over 7 feet of extension.
Wow.
He's an above average slider. The changeup was the game changer for him. Second half of the year, really found that changeup. It's kind of this like split grip change and can kill it down to like 1300 RPM. And that I think really helped him not only fly up to the big leagues, but make that, you know, adjustment and be able to settle in right away at the big league level. He throws strikes. I feel so good about his chances of being a back end of the rotation starter. And that's why he gets the edge on Malloy. I think Malloy could end up accumulating more war. But I'm going to take the surefire back end of the rotation starter, even if I have to wait a year, unfortunately, with the TJ.
For sure. And the way that opposing lineups need to beat Sawyer Gibson Long is by swinging the bat. And those are guys that I know you're always going to side with. I'm always going to side with, too. Like, I love guys that are willing to attack as soon as they get up and achieve the dream. And in four starts, this guy was what, 26 Ks, 8 walks? He's willing to attack the best hitters on the planet. And it's one thing if you have the stuff that is capable of doing it. It's another thing to have the moxie and the mindset to be willing to do it. And I think he's got a nice hybrid of both where, you know, he's not necessarily got a pitch that, you know, you look at and say that can get anybody in the world out. That can get anybody in the world to swing and miss. But he's willing to test it against anybody in the world. And that is something that I respect so much from starting pitchers.
And I think because he's kind of, you know, we talk about like seeing it go through the net and how it gives you confidence. I think he saw it go through the net a few times, like quite a few times in the upper levels. And was like, okay, there's something, I'm funky enough. And you think about the extension, right? We talk about how cross body deliveries, Jack, like, are generally, just think about it. If you're firing across your body, it's going to be harder to have extension. He's not a cross body guy, but he's a low release guy. He's 6'4", and he's a 5'3 release. So usually you also think about it. It's kind of a short arm delivery. Usually if a tall guy is going to have, you know, a lower release or they're really working down the mound and it's going to be really hard to command everything. He is a 5'3 release with really good extension. So I think that's weird enough. And then he's got two fastballs. He's got the sinker that I think plays well from that release point. And then, of course, a four-seamer is going to play well from that release point. So he's got the sinker that he gets ground balls with, and then he'll buzz the four-seamer up at the top. When he was just throwing the four-seamer, I think it was a little bit too flat. But now with that big-time run, he gets like 16 inches. And then the four-seamer up at the top with the changeup and the slider. It's four legit pitches. Fifth pitch is a cutter he'll mix in on occasion. He's just going to be able to mix it up, get enough weak contact, and I'm very confident he's a back end of the rotation starter for the Tigers next year or whenever he comes back. And they've got a lot of pitching depth all of a sudden, man.
So you said, what, 5'3 release height?
Yeah.
And 7 feet of extension?
Yeah.
Isn't that Wheeler?
Yeah. The difference is Wheeler gets like 18 inches of vert and throws like 97.
Right, we're right. But I'm saying, like,
but just it's from weird
characteristics.
Yeah.
And Wheeler, guess what, is 6'4", 215, I think. Like,
yeah.
I mean, when you extend that well and you're that low, and I'm not saying like, oh, this guy's fucking Zach Wheeler, because it at all. What I'm saying is you can watch Zach Wheeler, and what I've said for the last couple of years, and I'm sure that you think it too if you watch a good bit of Wheeler starts, is this guy throws bigger than he actually is. Mm-hmm. He looks like he's 6'6". Like, how is he only 6'4"? It's because he uses his legs so well, and he gets so far down on the mound, and he's so low. He's so into his legs when he's throwing. And that makes 97 look like 101. And that's how he can overpower for 8 innings in the postseason. So even if SGL is 92, guess what? 92 can start to look like 96 when you're that long and that far down on the mound. And that is why it jumps on people.
1,000,000%. And that's why he went from, you know, depth arm to maybe a good four. And that's the difference. Because again, he's getting less ride and less velo and whatever, but he's still getting that unique look and that edge that not a lot of guys are able to generate. Also shows you how ridiculous Zach Wheeler is, the fact that he's doing that with elite stuff too. So I always love drawing to those guys, and it just reminds you that's why we don't have a lot of ace potential prospects that we talk about, although there is one that we're going to talk about in a moment.
I'm willing to make a stupid comp make sense. Like,
no, that made sense.
You hear Zach Wheeler for Sawyer Gibson Long, and it's like, shut up, dude. I guarantee you there are so many listeners that are just like, shut up, dude. What are you talking
about? That's why I was like, elaborate, basically.
We get there, man. It's all about getting there.
Another guy with some good characteristics is Troy Melton. And I actually, I'll mention Mike Rothenberg on this one because I know Mike caught him. So I just wanted to shoot Mike a text and say, like, hey, you know, the data is pretty interesting on Melton. And he, another breakout last year, by the way. We talk about the themes. Theme for the Tigers is breakout. Melton broke out, fourth round pick. Didn't have the best college numbers, but really had a nice year last year. Off to a start this year, but I'm not too worried about it. Mike just told me he just loves the fastball. He said that was one that he felt like, you know, really hit the glove when he caught it. You know, that was one that he really felt like it was coming at you, and it was heavy, but also kind of riding up. And he felt like that alone was going to make him a big league arm. But what we've seen now since then is slider looks above average. Changeup is flashed above average. The problem for him is that hasn't been there for him totally this year. And then he mixes in a taste breaking curveball. The command has flashed above average as well. Again, early going this year has not been the case, but we saw really good command from him last year. Is another guy that just tracks like a high probability back end of the rotation starter for me. And he's coming off of finally a start that looked a lot more like what we saw last year, adjusting to double A, by the way, 23-year-old, but you know, I think the most polished guy when he was drafted out of San Diego State, kind of had it click for him in his draft year. I had some really, you know, rough numbers before that. Last start against Akron, 4 innings, 5 hits, no runs, no walks, 3 Ks. He just does a good job of getting weak contact, missing enough bats. I just think that the issue for him has been those secondaries haven't been there as much this year as they were last year. But I think they're starting to come back. And again, another guy that I just feel has a good chance of being a back end of the rotation starter.
So 377 hitters he faced in 2023. How many home runs did he allow?
Probably just a handful, say 7-5.
So that is a 1.3% home run rate. Like, guys don't take him deep.
Yeah. And that's, and that with command that he's had, I mean, he walked what, 6-7% of batters last year. Like the command, the confidence, the ability to limit hard contacts, keep the ball in the yard, and that'll play in Comerica for sure too. You know, I just, again, it's just the secondaries and both have flashed above average. You got a three pitch mix there, assuming that they come back. He could be up in the big leagues by next year. Number six, guy that could be in the big leagues, you know, next month, Ty Madden, right-hander. Some reason in Double A. I don't know why. I have no idea why. I'm very curious. Coming off of a fantastic start yesterday, by the way, against Harrisburg. 5 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 7 Ks. Just another safe arm, man. Like I just feel really good about his chances of being a rotation piece. And he probably has a little bit more upside. This is a guy that you could dream on three, you know, middle rotation upside. Whereas the other guys were talking about fours and fives. So first round pick for a reason. Really exploded, bursting onto the scene in Texas. It's a plus heater. It's a plus slider. It's a good cutter. Well, he's mixed in a changeup that's flashed average. And then that taste breaking curve. Average command. Another makeup guy. It's one of the smarter pitchers. Everything I hear about him is how cerebral he is on the mound, how much he likes to, you know, look into how he can sequence better, how he can, like, catchers, smart catchers love working with Ty Madden. And I think that's something that's always going to help a guy that he has good stuff, but it's going to help him maybe pitch like he has really good stuff. And that could help him track closer to the three. Really good chance of being a four, but with the intangibles and the direction that the stuff has been going, the Tigers could have a three here.
When did the heater become plus?
It's a good question. I think in the second half of last year, we really saw something start to change. The characteristics were better, started to get more ride, and he just started throwing harder. We just started to see him. I mean, like in the back half of last year, he went from averaging 94, 95 to more 96. And then at the end of the year, I think averaging 97. Like he was going up and up and up as the year went on. Gained a tick and a half to two ticks with more ride. Second half of last year would probably be the answer.
And he came out in spring training and he was hitting 98 consistently. He grabbed 99 a couple of times. I was like, who are you? Fun to see you show up. Nice to meet you. I'm Jack. I'm a huge fan of this guy. And I'm a huge fan of the really smart pitchers. Like, I feel like I've made that abundantly clear. But his ability to mix with something that is now 96, 97 is phenomenal. And it really feels like every mid-rotation starter in professional baseball now in 2024 needs to be sitting about 94 with their heater. Like, I don't think we'll see a mid-rotation guy that is 92, 93 anymore. I think he's got to be 94, 95 plus. And now that this guy is sitting 95, 96 and will have so many of those other movement profiles that he can turn to. I mean, this totally feels like a mid rotation guy.
Yeah. You'd have to have like outlier characteristics like the Inaga of the world and the Brian Woos, who's still, you know, he's still fighting to prove that he could be a middle rotation arm, or Bryce Miller or whatever it may be, but I'm with you. Like it's hard to find nowadays. And I just take a guess, by the way, what you think his fastball strike rate is so far this year through four games. Don't guess too high and ruin it.
No. I don't think 70% is too high.
No. It's not too high. I'll tell you what it was last year, though. It was 63.5.
Okay. I don't think 72% is too high.
It's not. It's 75%.
Damn.
So he's throwing harder, filling up the zone. And then the slider is right there, too, at 68%. So the command has gotten better. The fastball has gotten better. And he's mixing in the changeup, the cutter, and even that curve here and there, too. It's safe. Very, very, very safe arm that is giving us more upside now, too. Into the top five. We're going to talk Kevin McGonigal in a moment here. But before that, one more quick break.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IP Vanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
I'm so happy to see this guy back, Jack. Probably one of my favorite swings in minor league baseball at this point, just because it is so sound. It is so quick, compact, repeatable. And then you're like, whoa, you can actually run into some balls too. Like there's some pop in there. Got a late start to the year with an injury. And through his first two games, first game, he had to shake off the rust, only one hit and a stolen base. Then yesterday, three hits, a double and a stolen base. So already coming out of the gate, looking like Kevin McGonigal, hitting 571, no strikeouts through those first two games. He was phenomenal in his pro debut. And I think it's going to be more of the same this year. It's a top 100 prospect for us for a reason. It's a really sound offensive profile. I think potentially plus to plus plus hit tool, plus plate discipline. The game power, I'm hoping, can get to the fringy range. But even if it's below average, he's still going to hit enough and be gap to gap enough with good enough EVs to, you know, be an everyday hitter. Above average speed. We'll see long term where his home is defensively. They're still giving him run at shortstop. I think he could be there, which is fine. But I think he could be a really good defensive second baseman as well. This is just such a good bat.
Detroit had two picks in the top 37 last year. They got a high school bat with an incredibly high ceiling at 3. And they got a high school bat with an incredibly high floor at 37. And I think everybody is seeing that now. Like, it might have been the case when you saw him in Lakeland last year. Wait another week and a half. You'll see that floor really show out in Lakeland this year, too. You're going to see a guy hit the ball with a good bit of authority all over the field. And that is like, that's the goods. When you think about a 19-year-old kid that, like, has the chance to shoot up the minor leagues. I mean, you know, 2026 feels right, but it could be like break camp 2026.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he is the candidate of the type of guy that can just fly through the ranks. He had an Oppo homer in the Florida State League last year too. And I don't think anybody was really expecting him to be able to do that right out of the gate. The power flashes to the pull side though. We saw some 106s, 107s to the pull side. And I think that's going to continue to get better for him too. I think he's going to tap into a little bit more in that first game or in the second game yesterday, already popped a 106. So he hits the ball hard. And I think there's like this Daniel Murphy type of look to him that I really like. I think he could be one of those guys that if it all comes together, hits like 40 doubles. It's just a doubles machine and sprinkles in enough home runs. I don't know if he's going to have as much power as Murphy's a bigger guy, but I do see some of those similarities there. This is a dude that I would sleep very soundly within my farm system, knowing that there's not much that he needs to do other than just get ABs and get experience, and we'll figure out where the defense ends up. But I don't have to worry about the bat.
And you think he can be a factor on the base pass? You think that he can speed up defenses with a ground ball to the left side?
Yes. Yeah. He's above average runner, very heady and quick. So he gets good jumps. I think base stealing is going to be part of his game too.
Cool.
Number four. Jace Young, you saw Jace so far?
Yeah, I loved seeing Jace Young.
Tell me what you saw. Second base / third base, triple A. If there's room, he could be up soon. What did you see?
I loved what I saw from Jace Young. I saw a guy that has an innate ability to elevate to the pull side. And, you know, that's something that I really wasn't keyed in on with him until he got to West Michigan. And West Michigan, you just saw Twitter clip after Twitter clip after Twitter clip. And then like he's made his way up. And now in Toledo, all of a sudden, you know, you get a look at him hitting balls harder than I was expecting and in the air way more than I was expecting. He and Josh are both just ball players. They're pure ball players. And I think he does a really good job of leaning into what makes him really good. And it is mitigating, you know, that maybe lack of field of hit that you've got, like you've got a 45 future, 40 present. He's so direct and it looks weird. Like the setup looks really weird, right? Because the bat is pointing straight up. It's not a Craig Counsell thing because the hands are lower, but that in turn creates this direct plane that you really don't get for many guys. He's very direct, but he elevates with a direct swing that doesn't really make sense, because when you think direct, I think batted balls on the ground, but he bucks that trend somehow. And I think that might just be natural gift.
It's the turn, right? Like, so with guys, you know, the quickest way to get to the ball would be to just go straight down to it. You don't want to do that. So some of the most elite, you know, power guys are guys that can turn that barrel around and get it in the zone as quickly as possible without, because that's a long journey. If you think about it, you're turning the barrel all the way around and then you want it to go, you know, enter the zone on plane. So Jace somehow figured out, like, hey, if I set up like this, it's really easy for me to turn that barrel and get in the zone really quick and keep it that way. A lot of guys, I think, would be in and out of the zone with that angle and just turning it so quickly and kind of be spinny and pull off of it.
Or they're everything. They're swinging under everything because the barrel's going to dip.
He seems to have just found what works for him. And I'm sure he got some pushback on that at some point. But you see when he swings, it's a guy that knows his body, knows his moves, and knows what works for him. That move, though, yeah, sure. It's when you're selling out a little bit for lift and you're really focused on turning the barrel and elevating, yeah, you're going to have some, you know, some blue zones, especially at the top. It can be tough sometimes, but he can get to pitchers in tough spots. He swings hard. I was talking to a Texas Tech teammate of theirs that played with both of them, and he said that without a doubt in his mind, Jace Young has more power than Josh, and that wasn't an indictment on Josh. He thinks Josh is an all-star, but said Jace has more power, man. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, Josh hits the ball really hard, but Jace hits it just as hard and elevates consistently. And I think that's kind of the thing that Josh had been missing, which is the irony in it. But I think that this is a guy that even if the hit tool is a 40-45, he's going to elevate so consistently. He hits the ball so hard and, you know, he does not miss mistakes. I love the way that he's able to get that barrel in the zone early. And even if it is, you know, he doesn't have as much adjustability as some other guys, he's not going to miss pitches that he should be hitting out because of how consistently repetitive his swing is and that plane is and that path is. He's going to be a good piece. And I like that they're playing him at third. I don't have a lot of confidence in him being a great third baseman, but you know he's going to slug enough to play there. And, you know, if he can turn into an average defensive third baseman, which I think he can ultimately, you know, that's a little bit more valuable too.
Can I tell you, he looked fine at third base. Like, and that's okay because right now they're running on Matt Vierling. And like, hey, Matt Vierling is a big leaguer, but is he an everyday third baseman? No. Is Giovanni Urshela at this point an everyday third baseman? No. So let's see what we got here. I think some assortment of Colt Keith and Jace Young splitting second and third makes a ton of sense. And those are guys like, whoever you put at second base is going to lack mobility of a good second baseman. Whoever you put at third base is going to maybe lack the quick instincts and the cannon of a good third baseman. But you get the offensive value and the profile from both of those. And like, I'm okay with that if I'm the Tigers moving forward.
Absolutely. This team's going to be so fun, man. Like, it already is fun, but it's going to get
even more real fun. Good real soon.
I love it. I love it. Number three, Max Clark. First round pick, number three overall, Detroit Tigers, of course, but not the start that he may have wanted to his professional career. It was a brief taste last year, but all of a sudden now heating up and really heating up. And I think this is what we were kind of expecting, right? Like we saw some mechanical adjustments. You just see how quick the bat is. You see how fast he is in general, how patient he is in the box overall. And you're kind of wondering why the results weren't there in low A. And then over his last few games, I would say more than a few, has really started to catch fire and lean into, you know, who he is. He's hitting over 400 in his last 10. I do wonder how much power is in there. He did crush one, like 104, 400 feet to the pole side. But going the other way a little bit more this year, he's scorching line drives, you know, between first and second plenty. And when he beats it in the ground, he's got a great chance to beat it out. So I don't mind that
It's on the ground a little bit. He's walking nearly as much as he struck out, which over the last 10 games, which you love to see. Seemed like he was kind of struggling a bit in the early parts of this year with his new moves and kind of just the new pre-swing moves, the new setup. It seemed like he just was getting taken out of his swing some, didn't have the same body control that we had seen in the past. And now he's settling in to those new moves and settling into, you know, being Max Clark, I think. And Max Clark is an elite defensive center fielder with a rocket for an arm who could project as a plus hitter and give you enough power from the left side and the ability to get on base. It's a really good player.
Would I be fair in saying that he's one of the freakiest athletes we have in the minor leagues?
For sure. I think when you incorporate the arm, the bat speed, the elite speed, and, you know, just kind of everything that he brings to the table, just kind of being like a muscle hamster too. Like, yeah, I think that's totally fair.
Yeah, that's the thing that jumps out to me. And like, I got to see him live when he was in high school, his senior year of high school. And I was just like, you don't look like a normal 18-year-old. Like, what's going on with you here? And the answer is like, he was the best player in the country, like one of the best high school players in America at that point. So like, that's what you got to look like to be the top of the top of the top. And he has been working at a very high level for a long time now. And, you know, you've seen the YouTube videos, like he's up, you know, weird hours in the morning, deadlifting an absurd amount of weight for a guy that moves that well. And like, hey, shout out Max Clark. But, you know, the thing is, like, that translates into freakish athleticism and
twitch.
Yeah, twitch. I want to give guys the credit for that because it's not all God given. Some of it is, but a lot of it is a testament to the work that guys put in. So when we say physical specimen, a physical specimen at 6'1", 195, like, tip of the hat to you, Max Clark. You've worked really hard to, you know, create this physical specimen type being for yourself. So good on you. And that is what gives him that crazy high ceiling. My question for you is, when does the slug really start to come into play? Because I think that was part of the billing with him. It's, oh, yeah, he, you know, has a great feel to hit. He moves so well. But he also, like, the bat speed, like you're pointing to, is that going to translate to homers or is that going to translate to stings a ball into right center and left center and he's going to lead the league in triples with Comerica as his home ballpark?
I think more the latter. I do think that the power is going to come more. And I do think we can see he could have seasons of 20 home runs when he really gets into him pull aside and things like that. But yeah, I think that was one of the things that was slightly oversold in the draft because it's just not really who he is. And you know, I don't know if I want to see him selling out for that. He hits the ball hard on a line and drives it to all fields. And I think that's kind of what you want him to do. Again, certain spots, he'll leverage his counts. And like the one home run that you see right here, this was already this year. He can yank one pull side and really get into it. I thought the like highest ceiling in the draft thing that like Scott Harris said was a little silly because I think he has a lot of tools and has a lot of potential. And I do think could grow into average power. But like, oh, come on, we think this guy is going to hit 30 home runs? Like, I don't think so. That's not who he is. And he can be a perennial all-star not doing that. He can be one of the better defensive center fielders with elite stolen base ability, with a plus hit tool, who hits a ton of doubles and still hits you 15, maybe 20 home runs. But I never understood the like plus power thing. And I don't think we've really seen that. What I do love about Clark too is, and this guy was the man, right? And was celebrated as, you know, one of the, like you said, arguably the best high school player that we'd seen, and doesn't like how he does, you know, performed that first little pro stretch. And he works his butt off both in the gym, like you said, like a lot of guys do that, but also the willingness to make mechanical adjustments to the swing. Guys that have been good their whole lives and not faced much adversity at all, you say, oh, it's just a little slump. I'm going to go back out there. And he could have come back out this year with the same setup, same swing, had the same limitations. And then he'd be a little bit later to this turnaround and this start that now that he's had. So I think the willingness to adjust while still maintaining that ridiculous confidence that he has is impressive. And I think that's something that's going to, you know, bode well for him as he continues to climb. I think ultimately there could be average game power, maybe a little bit more if it all comes together. But to me, I see more of that, you know, Jacoby Ellsbury type of profile. And, you know, Ellsbury, again, had some years where he ran into him, but I think that was a little bit more park dependent. You put Max Clark in Yankee Stadium, yeah, maybe I could see 25 there. But I think ultimately it's the speed, it's the defense, and it's the feel to hit and ability to get on base that makes him good. And then hitting the ball so hard consistently is why he's going to have a lot of doubles, a high BABIP, and
you know, ultimately the slug will look good, whether it's home runs, doubles, and triples. Like he's going to slug enough regardless.
Yeah. That's a fun comp. I like Jacoby Ellsbury.
Yeah.
He made a lot of money.
He did make a lot of money. The Yankees probably still paying him. Yeah. Number two, Colt Keith, off to a slow start at the big league level. Is he cooked, Jack?
Yeah.
He's done.
Yep.
Keith, we talked about him on the Just Baseball show. He's fine. I do think he's getting Comerica'd a little bit right now. He has a 385-foot flyout, a 380-foot flyout, and a 400-foot flyout. That stinks. And when you're 20 games into your professional career, those kind of batted balls can start to get in your head a little bit. And I think it might be a little bit, because this is a guy that always has elevated consistently. That's why I've loved his offensive profile. Above average contact rates, above average EVs, elevating with a good approach. So far, he's been putting the ball on the ground a lot more. I think some of that is that he's been aggressive and pressing a bit, especially with fastballs. And this happens a lot with young guys. Oh, I'm in the big leagues. These guys are nasty. I can't miss my fastball. I can't miss the fastball. I need to hit the fastball when I get it. That doesn't mean that you swing at all the fastballs that you get. Mm-hmm. And so far, he's chasing fastballs at a 32% clip and then all other pitches well below that. So I think that's part of what's happening here. He's going to settle right in. I talked about him as one of the safest offensive profiles in baseball, you know, minor league baseball last year. And then what do the Tigers do? They end up extending him. If that doesn't reinforce that belief, I don't know what will. And 22 games is not enough to do the opposite of that and not reinforce that. So I think he's going to be just fine. It's not like he's getting overpowered. It's still a sub 20% K rate. I just like to see him be a little bit more selective. But when we're talking about what Colt Keith can be as a player, we talked about him in the top 100. It's plus power potential. It's above average hit. And the defense, by the way, he's grading out as a good defender so far at second base. How about that? Yeah.
I think if they commit to one spot with him, he can be a solid defender. He was just bouncing in between. And we saw what that did to Bobby Witt Jr. when he was at short and third. And I know that was short and third compared to, you know, second and third. But like Bobby Witt couldn't create an identity anywhere. And he was just like, all right, what do we got going on here? And he did not grade out as a good defender at all. He was a bad defender. And now guess what? Oh, he's got a consistent home. He's one of the better defenders in all of Major League Baseball. Okay. I'm not saying that Colt Keith is going to be one of the better defenders in all of Major League Baseball, but it could be a Marcus Semien thing where Semien, and like, again, it is Semien always grades out as an elite defender at shortstop, but he was a bad shortstop. He always grades out as an elite defender at second base. He was a bad shortstop. You've got Keith that was kind of bouncing between two. He was below average at both. You put him at one, you kind of close that. All of a sudden, he can become good if he gets to take reps at the same place every day and not have to worry about another. So he's young, like he's got time to do it. That's an important point about the K rate that I'm glad that you mentioned. Like, he doesn't suck. He's got a sub 20% K rate. This is more bad luck than some of the other guys that are punching out at a 40% clip.
I think it's a little bit of bad luck. It's a little bit of aggressiveness, and it's just a little too much weak contact early in counts, like we were talking about with Bigby and Triple A right now. And I think, like, going back to the other point, you just got to see one go through. Mm-hmm. I think he's got to see one get over the wall in right center that has just been evading him a bit. I think ultimately that the space in Comerica will play to his favor, because that guy loves to split the gaps. And it may suppress the power a bit. A guy that I do think could hit 30 home runs in a neutral site may only hit 20 to 25 here until he really starts getting comfortable with the pull side pop. And he's a guy that uses the whole field. I don't want him to be discouraged from doing that. Mm-hmm. I love the offensive profile as much as ever. Of course, I'm not concerned about it. And you have the ability to, you have a guy here that has the ability to hit, you know, in the high 200s, 275, let's say, and I'll give you plenty of 30 home run pop. And I want to see him walk a little bit more, but now the defense being where it is, this is a guy where when it all comes together, can give you 4 or 5 win seasons.
Yeah.
Last but not least, Jackson Jobe, coming off of a Jackson Jobe start. Finally, a little bit of a shaky beginning to the season that we had talked about on previous episodes. Now the right-hander, I had a really fun time watching his last outing. The changeup was back. 50 of his 66 pitches were for a strike. And he goes 4 innings, 3 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk, 5 Ks. but it was Jackson Jobe. You know, after the first inning, he settled right back in, and it was what we were used to seeing last year, which was one of the best strike throwers in minor league baseball with some of the best stuff. In that outing, fastball strike rate was 71%, changeup strike rate was 71%, slider strike rate was 85%, and then the cutter strike rate was 82%. That was like what he was doing last year when he was basically punching out the world and walking nobody. 103 punchies, 11 walks if you combine the Arizona Fall League as well last year. I mean, we're talking about a plus-plus heater, a plus-plus slider, a plus changeup, and an above-average cutter with what I do think ultimately is plus command. That is your 1A or 1B pitching prospect in baseball, whether or not he had two bad starts to start the season or not. I'm going to call my shot on this one too, and I can't wait for this to age poorly. Next outing, I think he goes nuts. I think we're seeing 8-10 Ks next outing.
And how many walks?
One.
Okay. I like that. The Jackson Jobe that is 8 Ks, one walk, is the one that is 1A, 1B with Skeens. Like, that's the pitch. Last year's numbers was the pitch. The Fall League was the pitch. First two starts, it sucks because he was measured as 1A, 1B with Skeens, and then Skeens does what he does for his first three starts, and Jobe does what he does for his first two starts. And it's like, how are these two even close? Because he's got this in the tank, and he did it every time out last year. And if he's back to doing it every time out, that is a guy that is arguably the best pitching prospect in the game.
The changeup that he was throwing in that last outing, just crazy fade to it, just falling off the table. And that pairing was a pitch that he found last year.
And pairing that with a 70 fastball and 70 slider is that's final boss shit.
Yeah. And then a low 90s cutter that he's going to buzz in on your hands. Through his first three starts, fastball strike rate was 70%, but he had a slider strike rate of 55%, changeup strike rate of 45%, and a cutter strike rate of 50%. Just to like give you a reference, sorry for throwing so many percentages, but slider last year was over 65, changeup last year was over 70%, and a chase rate over 50, and the cutter last year was a 67% strike rate. So that's why I said, like, I'm going to side with the 20 game sample, then the two game sample. And I think we already saw now in the third game that he's back to kind of what we're used to. I do wonder how much of the cold weather was a part of that. We talked about that a little bit, being a Texas kid, and last year really didn't pitch in the cold weather at all. The slider is a feel pitch. He's getting over 3000 RPMs on that. The split change is also very much a feel pitch, and the cutter is more of that's just that natural fastball. But I still will take this guy right there with Skeens. He's still my number one pitching prospect in baseball, because when that is all on, I think that the arsenal works off of itself and the pitches work off of each other as well as any you're going to see. And the fastball shape just looks really good right now. I'm excited to see if he gets rolling now, how they handle him. Does he get up to the big leagues, you know, at some point this year? I think so, if they need him. Again, it's just a testament to the pitching depth that they have. But this is like that Grayson Rodriguez type of situation where you've got three plus pitches, a solid fourth, and plus command. Yeah, I know Grayson didn't have all of that show last year, but up until that last start he had, it was showing in the early part this year. It's just so rare to get guys with this kind of arsenal and this kind of command. We talk about Skeens and Jobe, like, that's it. It's very hard to find frontline starters. Like, we talk about prospects and people are like, oh, how is he? How is Christian Scott? Like, why do you say number three or, you know, fringe two? He's, you know, striking all these guys out.
Because there might be 10 aces in Major League Baseball.
Yes. You got to have 360s and maybe 270s to be and good command to be an ace.
Yeah. Like, there are maybe 10 guys. Maybe.
Yep.
I saw ESPN put together a list of, I think, 9 aces. Kylie McDaniel did like an ace ranking. And I think there were 9 of them. And there were a couple of guys that were, medically DQ'd, like DeGrom, ace, medically DQ'd. I think Sandy, ace, medically DQ'd. I think he had Buehler as an ace that was medically DQ'd too. So, like, it's that kind of thing. But, man, like, I mean, he didn't have Shane McClanahan in there. I disagree with that. But,
yeah,
like, I mean, there are very few. There are 10. And just because your favorite team has a 1 doesn't mean that he's an ace.
Correct.
And
correct.
Jobe has ace potential.
I think he's one of 2. Maybe three if you say Painter as well.
Painter. I think Painter.
I love Cade Horton. Love him.
He's not
a two. He's a two, I think. You know, maybe even a three. Really good one. And it's the probability of him being a three that makes him so good. And you know, he could be a high end two. He ain't an ace. Maybe he's a one for, you know, a middling team. That's the difference. But Joe, one of two pitchers, two and a half, if you count Painter, that can legitimately be an ace in Major League Baseball. That'll do it for this episode. We'll do draft with you tomorrow. Hope you enjoyed it. Of course, the link is in the episode description to follow along. You can subscribe to those bonus call-up episodes with the link in the episode description as well. We're doing a mailbag for subscribers this week. Very excited about that. And keep an eye out on justbaseball.com. We've got that mock draft live already on the website. A lot more prospect content continuing to go out. Those pitchers and hitters roundups every single week that you can expect right around Monday, Tuesday. That's always a lot of fun. Any final thoughts, Jack?
I don't think so. Good stuff. Right. I really like where this Tigers top 10's at.
This team in general, it's a good time to be a Tigers fan. All of these guys are getting closer to the big leagues. Javier Baez's deal is getting closer to being done. A lot of talent up there. Mize
still
got is time
on that, man. Still have a couple years on that one.
Mize, every day is closer. It's like when you're in prison, you just X out. This is a great time to be a Tigers fan, and I hope we made you a little bit more excited about it. We'll talk draft with you tomorrow.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.